You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
This is the Leafs Guide Podcast. Here's your host, Jim Taddy.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode number 57 of Leafs Guide. Jim Taddy with you for the next, I want to say, 25 to 30 minutes. And our guest today will be Dave McCarthy from SiriusXM NHL Radio Network and NHL.com. Before we get there, and by the way, thanks, Mike Ross, for that fine intro. And before we get going, let me remind you of this. Week 2 of football is in the books. Now it's time to review the tape and get ready for Week 3 with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, to kick off another action-packed week. Here we go. DraftKings is giving new customers $150 instantly. Not tomorrow, not next week, instantly, when they bet $1 on any football game. Listen up, because you don't want to miss this. Head to the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, place a bet of $1 on any Week 3 game to receive $150 in free bets instantly. If Sportsbook is not available in your area, DraftKings still has huge cash prizes up for grabs all season long with their daily fantasy contest. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready for this? This is the call to action. And remember the code. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the promo code THPN. What is it? Is it THPN? You are correct. And you will see $150 in free bets when you place a $1 bet in any football game. The promo code is THPN. Is that correct? Let me check. It's THPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the National Football League. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for complete details. All right, now to the hockey story. Oh, I love this time of the year. Training camp is open. Wednesday, they had the medicals and the media stuff. Thursday, on the ice for the first time in two groups, and everybody out there working to try and figure out what the chemistry is to make the team. So much up in the air for a team that really has its core straightened away. Obviously, the top four forwards are going to do what they can do, and that is really good offensive play. And the defense is pretty solid, too. And then you've got a new goalie tandem. You've got this open audition for these jobs on the left side and third and fourth line, trying to figure themselves out, and new assistant coaches. So this is, I'm not going to say a reboot, but certainly there's a lot of new elements on this Leafs team. Here is the conversation I had with Dave McCarthy from SiriusXM, NHL Radio Network, and NHL.com.
Dave, let's just do like an overview on camp to start this off. I mean, there's so much new about this team, which I find refreshing. And then you've got a bunch of guys auditioning on the left side. You've got a new goaltending tandem that has to find its way. Defense is pretty well status quo, most respects. And new assistant coaches. Which one do you like the best?
Well, it's funny, and I'm with you. A lot of stuff is new on this team, but you wouldn't have thought that way based on what the message was, what the discussion was about on Wednesday when they opened up. By and large, the conversation was still about what happened last year. How do you learn from it? How do you get past that? How do you make sure you don't overlook the regular season? It was still very much focused on what happened last year, and I think that's understandable. And I think that represents what is going to be a significant challenge for this team throughout the regular season, is to find a way to make sure they don't overlook the regular season. Because as much as everybody wants to get to the playoffs, that is not a guarantee this year. Like, it, you know, was, you would have been fairly safe to make that bet at the beginning of last year, that the Leafs would have found their way into the top four of the North Division. You can't make that bet, I don't think, confidently, that they'll be within the top three of the Atlantic or find a way into a wild card in what is not just a competitive Atlantic Division, but also a competitive Eastern Conference. So I think that's going to be the biggest challenge. And I was a little bit struck by that, you know, how much the conversation still was looking back on last year. It wasn't, how are you going to replace Zach Hyman? Is, you know, Nick Robertson going to be a big part of this team? What are you doing on the bottom pairing of your blue line? That really wasn't much of a topic of conversation, which, you know, I think could be a good and a bad thing. Like I said, bad because it is difficult, I think, to find a way to make sure you don't get crippled by the expectations of last year, but also good in a way to think, well, okay, look, the worst has already happened. You can't possibly do worse than you did last year. And even if you don't make the playoffs, I think the blowback won't be as significant as it was this past year after the collapse against Montreal. It'll be more of a sense of acceptance, I think, Jim, where people will say, okay, look, you know, like this was needing a bit of a change of pace and a bit of a, you know, a difference, so to speak. So I think there will be more reservation to failure this year than there will be outrage. So if you're a player, if you're the coaching staff, if you're the management, maybe you can say, okay, well, the worst is over. Now let's just let loose, put our best foot forward, play without maybe a lot of pressure, and see what we can make happen here.
You know, I may want to challenge you on the outrage. I mean, if they don't make the playoffs, or even if they do, and they go out in the same fashion they did last year, I think there would be a major unrest here, and I think that there would have to be heavy-duty casualties. I think the unrest would actually go over the top if they didn't have heavy casualties. What do you think about that?
Well, no, I'm with you on that, but I think it'll be more, because I'll put it this way. If they don't make the playoffs this year, or they go out again weakly in the first round, and they don't make some significant changes, and they try to run the band back together yet again, I mean, what are we doing here, right? Like, how many times do you need to have it proved to you you're not going to win with the constitution of this roster as it is before you decide to reallocate some resources? So I think it goes without saying that there will be some significant change, which is to say that I think from the standpoint of the fan base, it goes back to my point being, okay, well, people aren't going to be outraged. They're going to be like, well, see, we told you the outrage was this offseason, and, you know, clearly now it's time to make a change. Well, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We'll see what happens. But I do think the worst of the outrage, regardless of the result this season, will have been dealt with and seen already this offseason.
What I kind of like is, just as an overview, and we'll get into the specifics shortly, but as an overview, you've got a bunch of guys auditioning on the left side, pretty good jobs on the left side, especially on the top two lines. You've got a goaltending tandem trying to figure out its way, and you've got a defenseman in Morgan Rielly that has a real opportunity to make a name for himself this year, not only in the NHL, but also in the Olympic competition on Team Canada. So what I like, if you put all that stuff together, you've got people that have to not prove themselves, but have an opportunity to make a name for themselves, and that fits all the descriptions or all the areas that I just mentioned. I like that component on this team.
I do like that, too. Even John Tavares came out and yesterday said, and I was a little bit shocked by the candor, but he was asked, you know, how much are you focusing on Team Canada? How much would you like to be a part of that program? Because remember, he was a part of that program in 2014 and then got hurt in the tournament and did not get to play down the stretch in the medal round. And he said, really badly, I want to be a part of that team. And that was interesting to me because I really haven't heard many people even mention his name this time around. So he's dialed in, focused on that. In addition to what he dealt with last year during the playoffs, he didn't get to participate in the league's first round by and large last year either. So he's really motivated. Morgan Rielly, absolutely motivated. Not only that, but a contract year as well. If he can go out, play well at the beginning of the season, he wasn't quite as overt. He said, I'm just trying to focus day by day, and if I play well enough, and, you know, I'm doing what I need to be doing and should be doing for this Maple Leafs team, Team Canada will take care of itself, but there's reason for him to play well and to get himself into that conversation. Hey, he'd love to be a part of Team Canada. Let's not kid ourselves here. And if he does that and plays well enough to be a part of Team Canada, come contract time next year, whether it's with Toronto or with another team on the open market, I think regardless of how the playoffs transpire, it's going to be, you know, folks, I want my $8.5-9 million a year on a long-term deal, and I think he'd get it. So he's really motivated. Mitch Marner can throw into that group as well. William Nylander would like to be a big part of Sweden. I think, quite frankly, he was the best player the Leafs had in the playoffs last year. So now it's, okay, well, can we see that guy again a little bit more consistently this summertime? Austin Matthews goes without saying he'd like to be a big part of Team USA. So there's a number of guys where there's a lot on the line, not just in terms of what they're able to get done with the Maple Leafs, but if they play well enough individually, which would help the Maple Leafs, but also help themselves as well, to really dial in and cement their own resumes with opportunities at the international level.
Probably the least talked about story is the new assistant coaches. That means yet another fresh look at the power play. And for whatever reason, very disappointing as the season wore on. It started out great. We all know that story. And by the time they got into the playoffs, the power play was a zero. It just didn't add anything at all. So this will be the fourth guy who tries to solve this. What's your take on that?
Yeah, no, you're right. And let me just also throw into that previous question, Peter Mrazek for Czech and Jack Campbell for USA as well.
Right.
They'd like
yeah.
to be part, you know, so there's the net binding aspect of that as well. But no, you're right. Like the power play is going to need to be, like worlds better than it was last year. It was not just a non-factor. It actively worked against them, in the second half of the season into the playoffs. Like I don't know, at times I was, you know, thinking, man, is this football? Can Sheldon Keefe decline the penalty? Because they had a better chance to score at even strength than they did on the power play, and it was just really strange given how much ability and talent they had. But I think what really started to work against them is, look, it's what Mike Babcock said all the time. The other team is trying to feed their family as well, and guess what? The Leafs became predictable, I think, on the power play. And the other team doubted that, and they all got the penalty killers into the meeting room or Zoom or whatever they did last year before they played the Maple Leafs and said, okay, boys, here's how it goes. They're going to get it to the point. They're going to get it down to the left dot, to Marner, and he's going to try to go across to Matthews. So clog up the middle. If that doesn't work, he's going to get it back to Riley, and he's going to try to drop it down to Matthews. So that's really the only two things that they tried to do on that power play. They really rarely worked it down low behind the net. They really rarely worked it into the middle of the ice. And they just became very stale and stagnant. And I think that's going to be priority number one for Spencer Carberry, who is being tasked with the responsibility of reinventing the power play this year. And it's not just this past season. The year before that, the power play wasn't really all that good either. Under McFarland, they need to find a way to become unpredictable where you really don't know what they're trying to do. You look at Tampa Bay last year during the playoffs. Like they had five options out there. To try to score, and they were always moving. They weren't just slotted in to their position on the ice, like it's, you know, that old-timey slot hockey game where everybody just stayed in there. You know, that doesn't work. Tampa Bay, there was movement all over the place. Brayden Point was popping in and out of the middle of the ice. Alex Killorn was jumping out from the top of the crease to behind the net back. And, like, there was movement. So you could never really set and dial in. It became very difficult to handle. I think honestly, job number one is to introduce an element of unpredictability to that power play. There's more than enough talent for them to score, and because of that, you know, the old line for the Maple Leafs was our power play is our toughness. Well, it wasn't very tough last year.
Yeah, I mean, it struggled going back to Babcock when you had Jim Hiller there. I mean, it still didn't work. And the one thing that's consistent along the way was when it didn't work, it didn't matter who the power play coach was. It always looked the same. In other words, there was nothing happening. It was stagnant. It was predictable. There was no adjustment. It was like they were reading from a playbook that didn't work.
Yes. Yes, yes. And like I said, do you not think the other teams know that by now?
Of course they do. Yeah.
You know, so that's why, you know, it's like, again, to use the football reference, if you know what play is coming, it becomes a lot easier to stop if you're on defense. Well, same thing goes to the power play. And really, the format has been by and large the same for the last two or three seasons with the Leafs power play. You know, if they're not going to change it up, then they're doomed for failure yet again this year. I don't care how skilled the guys are. It just became too predictable to me. I remember sitting in the press box in the 18-19 season telling, you know, having this conversation with colleagues. It's just like, look, here it comes. Yep, up, there it is. Yep, oh, here it comes. Up, there it is. And, you know, it really hasn't changed since then.
Yeah, it's that neutral zone drop pass for the steamboat count. Doesn't really work.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, I mean, well, just quickly on that. I mean, that, I know, gets a lot of people hurt, and I get it, but that's more just on gaining entry into the zone. Once you get in the zone, what are you doing then? Like, if that was to get you across the blue line without having to give up possession of puck, I'm okay with that. But it's once you're set up, then what tricks do you have in your playbook? And that's where I go back to saying the playbook, the book of tricks, is pretty limited.
Yeah, it's almost like they dropped their data card at home plate and the other team got it. I'm just saying, you know, I mean, it's almost like that. It's not exactly like that. But anyway, let's move on. I find that what's intriguing for me is you're looking for the positive push on this team. And I think we leave the top four forwards out because we know what they're capable of until we get to the playoffs, and that's another issue. But we're just going to push that to the side. So we talked about, you know, the emerging goaltending tandem and all those guys trying to fight for two or three jobs on the left side. And they are impressive jobs because of who they're going to be on the left side of. But having said that, I'm going to circle Mikheyev, Kerfoot, and Engvall. And if any one of those three guys takes a giant leap forward, this is a very positive story.
Yes. I would expect Ilya Mikheyev to take that step. He wants a bigger role. Okay, that's good. I want guys on my team, if I'm a coach or a manager, who are not satisfied with being in lower roles. I want them to strive for more. Good. But now you have to give me a reason to put you on the ice more often. That comes the other part of it. He spoke today and said, well, now it just comes down to working hard, and that's easy for me, working hard. And I kind of agree with that. You know, working hard is a skill that, quite frankly, not everybody has. If it was easy, if everybody did it, it wouldn't matter. But there are some guys who just, quite frankly, have a better engine than others. Zach Hyman was one of those guys. He just worked harder than everybody else every time he was on the ice, and that's why he's got his career to the point that he commanded the deal that he did in free agency. So I think Ilya Mikheyev is trying to take a step forward. Let's see it now. If he's just going to say, I want the opportunity, but doesn't give Sheldon Keefe a reason to put him on the ice more, well, that's only one part of the equation. I still go back to what I think, what we talked about maybe two months ago, that Ilya, or I should say Alex Kerfoot and Peter Engvall, they're the same guy. One of those two guys will should be around moving forward, and the other guy, they should find a way to move on from, because I think they play a similar role. I think Ilya Mikheyev, quite frankly, Peter Engvall, for the contract that he has and the size that he has, if he could just decide to play, we've seen it in spurts every so often. It seems like he's shown up to the rink in a bad mood. And when he does that, the size that he has, he can really pretty much do whatever the heck it is he wants to do on the ice. And he's got that speed as well. I think, again, he is at a crossroads in his career where he can really put himself in a position to command a nice deal moving forward once this contract is up, and I believe this is the final year of his deal. You know, or he can just slide into mediocrity to be just sort of just a guy, right? Where you'll be using him to fill out a roster. I think he's got the skill set to size up all the whole package, put it together. I think he can become a really effective player. And if that's the case, then I don't really see a role for Alex Kerfoot, because I think they'll play similar roles. I think Engvall could be a guy that plays in that third line center role. I think he's a guy that could help you on your penalty kill, all of that. If that's going to be the case, where do you put Kerfoot? I think you've got better options on the wing with a guy like you. Like, you don't want to box Nick Robertson out, Jim, if he shows that he is in a position where he demands to be put on the ice. And if Nick Ritchie can use his size to his advantage, and Mike Bunting as well, I think they project as better options as puck retrieving wingers than a guy like Alex Kerfoot would be. So that's sort of how I see it playing out between those three guys that you just brought up.
Well, since you brought up Nick Robertson, I mean, this is sort of the way I look at this. Because of the numbers of those guys auditioning on the left side, if you had one that exceeded your expectations, it would just take this team somewhere else. And I always circle Nick Robertson because everybody has sort of slotted in the new guys they brought in from other teams in those roles. But if you've got somebody from within who could, you know, jump up on that roster and knock somebody down in terms of a guy like Nick Robertson take somebody's job, that's a huge advantage to the Leafs.
Well, it is. It is. Because, look, at the end of the year, I always look back at teams that had good seasons, went on a decent run. And honestly, Jim, invariably, I can pick out a guy or two at minimum on a roster where I say, man, at the beginning of the season, it's not that they had low expectations for this guy. They had no expectations for this guy. And suddenly you turn around and he demands to be put on the ice because of how well he's played. Ross Colt was one of those guys for Tampa Bay last year. And Nick Robertson projects one of those guys for Toronto because he's not just a skill set that can earn a job and be a guy in the NHL. I think he can be an excellent player in the NHL. He's got the skill set, he's got the speed, he's got an elite level caliber shot. But man, does he have an engine. Like Haley Wickenheiser during the development camp was saying, we talked to him about dialing it back a little bit. And Nick turned around and said, well, no, it's not the first time I've heard that. I appreciate her advice, and I totally understand what she's saying. But he said, look, I'll dial it back when I know where I stand in my career. And if anything, I've dialed it up even more to force myself into the lineup for the way he trained in the offseason, the way he ate, his sleep pattern. Like, he is, to use the expression, dialed in on every aspect of his life to make himself the best that he can be. And the only negative about that is you just hope he doesn't cripple himself by the routine and by the obsession with the detail. I'm all for routine, but, I always said, look, if it comes down to the point where you have to park in the same spot every day and if someone happens to be in your parking spot that night, and because of that, you're thrown off and you're just no good that night, well, that's no good. But as long as he can use all that determination and that detail and channel it toward good and incorporate Haley's advice where it's like, okay, look, learn where you can just take a breath here and there. I have a great deal of confidence that this guy is not going to let himself be turned aside. He trained with his brother this summer in the offseason, Jason, at Dallas Stars, who was a Calder Trophy runner-up. And he said, look, my brother's a bigger guy than I am. So a lot of what we did, I was having him lean on me. I was having him hack and whack and slash and haul me down. So I could fight through all that. And he said I was helping him with his shot. So, like, there was a symbiotic relationship there between the two brothers. But this guy has done everything he possibly can to put himself in the spot. And Kyle Dubas said yesterday he has no preconceived notions right now on where Nick Robertson will end up, whether it's with the Marlies, whether it's with the Maple Leafs. He said if he plays well enough, bulldozes his way into the lineup, he starts the season with the Maple Leafs. It's up to him. So we'll see what he decides to do. But he is a guy that I think could really turn himself into a guy that at the end of the year, you look back, one of those guys where there were really minimal to no expectations. By the end of the year, he's a big part of the team.
Well, look, I'm gonna name four names, and there are much more auditioning for the jobs with Bunting, Ritchie, Robertson, and Kashuk. I mean, of those four players, I don't think it's unrealistic to think that one of them could
could be a perfect fit and have a great season. I don't think that's much of a stretch.
No, and then there's Nikita Gusev as well, who's in camp on a PTO, and Josh Hosang, where really who knows what you're going to get out of him. You know, I am not high, quite frankly, on either player, because Gusev and Hosang, I don't think they've got, they've got all the talent in the world, but they just don't play a complete enough game for me to put them on the ice in the third round of the playoffs when games are on the line. So, you know, we'll see. I don't see it with them. With Bunting and Richie, I know Rick Tocchet was very high on Bunting from what he saw out of the Coyotes last year when he was the head coach. Rick Tocchet is the guy that, let's be honest, likes his team to play a heavier game. And
yep.
the Coyotes, by and large, they were soft, was put in nicely. But when they called Bunting up, he was a guy that had size and showed a willingness to go to the front of the net and mix it up. Any surprise why Rick Tocchet kept putting him on the ice? So if he can keep doing that in Toronto, that will be a valuable component to this team that they have in short supply right now, especially with Zach Hyman going out the door. Nick Ritchie, same goes for him. Andre Kasha, I don't know. Like, he's got to find a way to stay healthy. If he does, okay, he's going to be a skilled guy. But what else is he going to bring your lineup? Will you play him in the top six? Like, could he play on a second line with John Tavares? And William Nylander? Maybe. And then could you have Bunting on your third line to add an element of grit and physicality with a little bit of offense as well? That's possible. And then with Nick Ritchie, to solidify a spot between or alongside Matthews and Marner, then maybe you have something there. And then you look at the bottom of the lineup with Engvall and Simmons, and then you look at Jason Spezza on the fourth line. I still think a guy like Curtis Gabriel should be in the mix for this team on the fourth line. And then whomever it is on the fourth line left wing, whether that's Robertson or somebody else. That's sort of how it's shaping up right now. But, we put it this way. We go back to all these guys they've brought in, and they've gone through a similar playbook the last two or three years because of the situation they've been in, Jim, from the cap standpoint, where they brought in a bunch of guys every single year on short-term, low-money deals, hoping that one of them, if not two of them, will hit. And really, other than Spezza, none of them have. It's about time that somebody starts to hit this year, and at least they're going to need it to be good.
Well, all I'm going to say is those numbers suggest it should be one. If it's two, that's parade worthy. I just want to end on this. The way you described McKayev reminded me of how we would have described Zach Hyman when he first showed up with the Leafs. Now, this guy, because the roster was thin, wound up in a top six role many times early in his Leaf career. Now, he couldn't match. He didn't have the offensive skill, so he sort of didn't fit originally in a top six role, but he turned himself into that guy, and that's really the challenge for McKayev, isn't it?
What is? He's got all the speed in the world. He can certainly keep up with the guys up the lineup. But the question is, for him, to me, when I watched him early in his career, it seemed like he was going a million miles an hour, but didn't really get anything done. Do you know what I mean? Do you remember like Jason Blake during his Leafs career? It always seemed like he was going a million miles an hour, but he never got anything done. So
smart, not hard.
Exactly. And Zach Hyman probably wasn't the fast. Definitely is not the fastest guy in the league by any stretch. But he really zeroed in and dialed in what his game is all about and where he needs to go on the ice in order to have success. So, he was never out there trying to beat guys one-on-one in the neutral zone. If he ended up with the puck in the neutral zone, would dump it in and go get it back. If Matthews or Marner were carrying the puck through the neutral zone, which they're more than capable of doing, Zach Hyman's first job was to get his ass to the front of the net to create chaos and drag defenders with him to the front of the net. It's not to hang out on the left wing for a drop pass to weave his way in. That wasn't his game. So Zach did a really good job of refining his game and figuring out what it was that he had to do to make himself successful. And I think Ilya Mikheyev, if he's got the head for it, and it comes down to coaching as well, I think they should be showing him tapes of Zach Hyman and say, look, you know, as Pavel Datsyuk always used to say, and he's the Austin Matthews or the Mitch Marner in his equation. Okay, look, I want the puck all the time. Okay? Yeah, I want the puck. I want guys on my line that are going to get me the puck. So as much as you might want it, that's fine, but I want it. And I'm the guy who's shooting at the net 40 times a year. So if you want to play on my line, you know, here's what I need you to do. And this is what Sheldon Keith should be hammering home to Ilya Mikheyev. Because guess what? If Ilya Mikheyev dumps it in, he's got more than enough speed to win that race to the puck, to get it back, create a cycle, and then get to the front of the net like Zach Hyman did. If he can do that, I think he can be a really successful player. And then you couple that with his penalty killing acumen, seems like he gets three breakaways a night shorthanded. Even if he doesn't shoot in the net 20% of the time, that means, like, you know, every now and again he'll give you a short, which is good.
Yeah.
And then he becomes a really useful player on the team. So I think the opportunity is there if he has a willingness to buy into the program. And I think, too, coaching will be really important to just essentially put blinders on the horse, so to speak. Channel in, here's what I need you to do, this, only this, execute that, and you will be successful, and by and large, we'll all be in a good spot.
Uh-oh, Dave, I checked, and we're both optimistic. Oh, no.
Well, I don't know if I'm optimistic. I'll lay out the recipe for what needs to go right, whether it'll happen. That's why I got out of the prediction business long ago, Jim. We'll see how it pans out.
Yes, we'll see. Dave, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Last minute of play in this podcast.
Well, thank you, Mike Ross. That means the time budget is in play. Time now for a quick Yes Guy, No Guy on the way out. Yes Guy, No Guy number one. So many possibilities here. New assistant coaches, all kinds of people auditioning for the left side on the forward unit, and a new goaltending tandem. Is this a yes guy? Oh, it's a yes guy. The last thing you wanted to do was bring everybody back after that disappointing exit to Montreal. You need new blood in this team. You need new optimism. People that are searching for the answer as opposed to those who couldn't find it before. That is an emphatic yes guy. Yes guy, no guy number two. The Leafs are right to only deal with the elimination last year as opposed to the 54-year Stanley Cup drought. And literally everybody in the Leafs operation was not alive the last time the Leafs won the Stanley Cup. It's an emphatic yes guy. Short-term memory. Just go with what didn't work last year for those that are on the team. And for those that have been added to the team, who cares? You move forward. So that's an emphatic yes guy. And yes guy, no guy number three. You are confident in the Leafs' core players. Oh, that's an emphatic yes guy. You know what they could do. They've done it before. Hasn't happened in the playoffs, mind you. But during the regular season, no issue. And my money is on the core players to figure this thing out. It's an emphatic yes guy. I hate to be too positive, but it is the start of training camp. There's nowhere to go if you're negative. Hope you enjoyed episode 57 of Leafs Guy. Hope you come back next week for episode 58.